Thank you all for coming to the Microsoft Ignite Mobile panel. We've got a great set of guests today that we're going to talk to, and we also have Jordan. So we're going to talk about mobile technology, kind of where it is today in the marketplace, and also what Microsoft is doing. These gentlemen here all represent their various respected technologies at Microsoft. And I thought we could start kicking this off before we start asking questions from the crowd with if each of you could give like a 30 to 60 second pitch on what is it that you guys represent and what is that technology? Because I'm sure not everybody understands all of the technologies. Ankit?
I'll start. So I'm going to be representing C++, and I think my 30 second pitch on C++ would be is that, you know, for the last two decades, if you look at cross-platform languages, C++ has been one that's been there. And if you take a look at today, you can pretty much write an app that's going to be able to target any platform with C++. It could be Android, it could be iOS, it could be Mac, Linux, and even IoT. So, and to be honest, like C++ has two stories. You can write an entire app in C++ if you're looking, if you want to do that because if you want to reuse the existing code, or you think that you really need that platform differentiating performance from that perspective, or you can actually combine C++ with all these other languages and technologies that you're going to hear about more and build your end-to-end app. So I think if you're looking for performance, if you're looking for that platform differentiating experience, if you're looking at time to market and you want to use the existing skills and code, there's really only one answer. That's C++.
Awesome. I'm sensing this is going to be kind of like the newlywed game here. Come date me. All right, Jordan.
This is going to be an interesting thing to stack up. So I'm Jordan. I work in the Visual Studio team on JavaScript mobile developer tooling, specifically the tools for Apache Cordova, or what we call Taco. And tools for Apache Cordova, they let you build native mobile applications using JavaScript, HTML, and CSS. So you can take your existing web developer skills and go mobile with them. They let you, basically it's building your app inside of an embedded web browser inside of a native application, and you can get it native device capabilities using this plugin model. Cordova is an open source project, and we build our tools on top of Cordova rather than doing a fork or a branch of it. So if you've heard of Adobe PhoneGap actually as well, Adobe PhoneGap is Adobe's fork of Cordova. It's similar technology. Our tools work on top of anything Cordova-based.
Cool. Danny.
So my name's Daniel. I also work on Visual Studio, but I work on tools for Universal Windows Platform Developers, which is the Windows 10 developer platform. So while they are native Windows tools, with the Universal Windows platform, you can build a single Windows application that targets any one of the Windows 10 device families. So that could be phone, desktop, Surface Hub, Internet of Things. So like I could run Windows 10 on my Raspberry Pi, Xbox, HoloLens, you name it. And those are just the ones out today. Who knows where the world of Windows 10 will be in just a few years from now.
Awesome. James?
Perfect. Yeah, so I'm on the Xamarin team here at Microsoft. I was at Xamarin before that, and I was a customer before that, so this is stuff I truly love. And with Xamarin, what we said is, listen, C# is the best programming language ever created, basically is. It is, it's a fact. And .NET, this amazing library, is amazing, right? It's this amazing thing. And what we said is, like, why shouldn't it just go everywhere? You know, we could put it on Linux, it's already on Windows, we'll put it on Mac, we'll put it on these iOS, Android devices, we'll put it on a TV, we'll put it on your watch, we'll put it everywhere, and that's what we did. We enable you to build purely true native applications, not running in a web browser. native.
This is gonna get good
today. Yeah, they're truly native applications. But what we do is we enable you to build a shared C# backend. So all your business logic models, view models, things that you can share with a UWP application or things that you can share with an ASP.NET website or anything else that runs C# and .NET, anything in .NET Core. Then we give you the tools inside of Visual Studio on the PC to build out beautiful native user interfaces with 100% API access to every single thing that you can do in iOS, Android, Mac, and of course Windows. And you can do it all on a Mac too, in Xamarin Studio. It's beautiful. Work wherever you want. Deploy native apps everywhere. And we also have a cross-platform UI layer too. So if you don't want to build separate UIs, you can do one UI for all of them, all in XAML. It's beautiful. It's maybe over 30
awesome.
Seconds, but it's a big product.
Awesome. And that's a great intro to kind of explain what the four different platforms are here. There are other platforms, too, that people use out there in the wild, things like React Native and NativeScript. There's progressive web apps. There's Titanium's Appcelerator product. There's so many of these products out there. But these four in particular, want to talk about what these platforms will do for folks. Any questions for the crowd? And if you have a question, please come to the microphone so we can record it.
So, hello. Is it true that you all hate Power Apps?
No, I wouldn't say we hate it. Actually, interestingly enough, unless something changed at this conference, Power Apps is using Cordova for their applications. So there's kind of a path there for it.
Could you explain a little bit what Power Apps are, maybe for others who are out there?
I haven't had to work with enough, so I don't know if I've got the best understanding of it. Mm-hmm. But you could view, so each of our technologies, it's going to be geared toward a developer building a mobile application. Power Apps, my view is it can kind of be that level of someone that doesn't necessarily want to do the full development route. You want to build out an application maybe a little more simply, mm-hmm. kind of like could be forms-based, some simple approach to an app, and it will build out the application for you. And it's using Cordova behind the scenes and does some of that, and then you can start tweaking the code. But it's not as much of the developer-focused thing like what we're talking about, where we go for code first. You actually start with more of a
So is that a good place to start with? Are you talking about personas? Like the audience who's actually trying to work and building a mobile app, there could be people who are more into developer focus. There could be people who are more of a business focus and are looking to create an application but don't necessarily want to get into the code base itself. I think that's where Power Apps and some of these others really can differentiate, because we're not all targeting the same person. We all have different backgrounds and skills, right?
Right, yep.
Cool. So yep. Do you all hate it?
I wouldn't say I hate it. I would say it's different. Different audience.
Definitely a different audience, I think, is the key there. Someone actually came up to me after my session and was asking me about Power Apps, and like, when would I use Xamarin Forms, because it's a cross-platform UI, or when would I use Power Apps? And to me, it comes down to that kind of developer mindset. It's like, do I want full control over the background processes and push notifications and things like that? And Power Apps like, hey, like I have some data source maybe in SharePoint or some database. I'm just going to do some CRUD operations and just pump out some apps and tie in some flow or something like that into it. But to me, I think it's like if that's what you want to accomplish, it's a great tool for you to do. If that's what you need to accomplish at the end of the day, I think any of our approaches building apps for developers that are taking advantage of all the power, I think that's when you need to pick a platform. But I definitely don't hate Power Apps, because it's like if you need to pump out 100 applications against your SharePoint backend and Power Apps is great for you, do what works best for you. That's what I've said for the last 5 years. Do what works for you. But
I agree. I think that Lord of the Rings is a great movie. I love it. It's got a great concept in it, which I think a lot of developers and business people out there are trying to look for, and that's the one ring to rule them all. Everybody wants this one mobile platform, one technique to build every app that they've got, but I think that's a fallacy. I think that depending on who you are, what you're trying to accomplish, and we talked a little earlier before the show about what kind of apps are you building. And Jordan, you mentioned something about either public-facing apps or enterprise internal apps maybe having a differentiation. Could you talk a little about each of you and how you guys view if you're building an app for either the public and the public app store versus building it for your company, how you might make different decisions?
Actually, yeah, sure, I'll start. So essentially, I mean, if you're looking at C++ in general, like let me give you an example. Like if you take a look at the top 100 apps on the Android store, about 70% of them will probably be using C++. And the reason for that is because when you take a look at those 1.5 million apps that are there on the Android app store as an example today, for you to be able to differentiate your app from a performance perspective, from an experience perspective, you really want be able to control memory utilization, your hardware specs, you're able to use all the hardware resources available, provide the graphics that you need, especially if you're building a game. And that's really where C++ kind of like shines. Like, so if you're looking at games, a lot of games are also Unity these days, but a lot of them are still just basically OpenGL and so on. So if you have custom UI, you want to write an OpenGL, game or graphic-like thing, C++ is great for that because it's great for the compute-intensive stuff. Now, if you're a large enterprise and you've historically had a lot of C++ code, like for example, internally, Office and Skype are two very good examples, which were pretty popular desktop apps, and majority of them, have C++ code there. And when they wanted to take this to Android and iOS and Mac, what they ended up doing is basically using that thick cross-platform C++ layer and then adding a UI, which is a native UI on the platform. On Android, they basically went with Java and C++. On Apple platform, they went with Objective-C, Swift, and C++. And on the Windows platform, they went with C# and C++ there. So I think that's the story that, you know, I'll keep talking about again and again. You know, large enterprises, existing code, platform differentiating experience, performance. I think those are the kind of apps that typically use C++, and I think that's going to remain a trend. I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. And I think I would end with saying that, you know, C++ is that one currency that's accepted in every platform. And that's not necessarily the case for all technologies, because if you take a look at it, Android supports C++ natively, iOS supports C++ natively, Windows supports C++ natively, their IDE supports it natively, Xcode supports it natively, Android Studio supports it natively, and so on. So those are the kind of things that I would do with C++. Games, large enterprise apps, existing apps that, you know, Adobe PDF Reader, compute-intensive algorithm apps like Adobe Photoshop, those are the kind of apps that probably I see where C++ lies best. And if that's basically what you're building in your company, in your organization, or looking to build that in the future, that would be my advice. Now, James is going to tell you something else, but...
I'm going to tell you to take all that C++ and then create C#, you know, swig on top of that, and then consume that in your Xamarin application, because since your apps with Xamarin are native, of course you can use C++. We were talking earlier, actually. I've gone to a lot of companies. I was down in Texas. You know, there's a lot of oil and drilling and gas and stuff like that down there, and there's these legacy applications that are using millions upon millions of lines of C++ code because it's such a powerful number crunching that you can get down to and super performant. So what the companies are doing is they already had the C# like kind of p-invoke layers on top of it. They just brought it into a Xamarin iOS or Android or UWP application. So that's why, you know, you can't get away from C++, even though I stopped writing games a long time ago. After I wrote games and I said, I'll write desktop apps in C#, thank you. I'll let you manage my memory. It makes sense. But yeah, so it's still super important. So that's a counterbalance.
Thanks, James. No appreciate problem. It. Yeah.
And also, OnKit's team was working really hard to make that available to Xamarin developers. You can go in and create an Android C++ like library, and it'll automatically generate a lot for you, which is really nice. So I appreciate OnKit's team. Making it happen for all of you.
Yeah, anything for you, James. Yeah,
I appreciate that.
It's a lot of love up there right now. Wow. So we just talked about, we heard from C++ and from the Xamarin side, where you can pretty much target any platform with both of those for the apps, whether it's enterprise or it's public facing. What about you, Danny?
So with the Universal Windows platform, one of the things that's really great about it is that you could target both enterprise applications and public facing applications that run on any Windows device. So if you're building Xamarin applications, it's going to be more difficult to target platform-specific APIs, saying you want to leverage a Raspberry Pi-specific API and you want to do something with your IoT devices or your Xbox devices. Or, I mean, the next big thing is going to be HoloLens and holographic computing. And while, yes, you can use other technologies to target that, if you really want to build a true native experiences for these devices, you're going to want to target the Universal Windows platform natively. It's just going to be the easiest way to do things. So.
And there was an announcement about 400 million apps now running Windows 10, right? And
400 devices.
400 million devices.
We don't have 400 million apps yet.
That would be impressive.
Soon.
We're getting there. Yeah. So I mean, the true power with Windows 10, you've probably heard some of the publicity that we're being a little forceful with our upgrades, but it's because we think we're delivering a great experience. And when Windows 10 is running on all of the Windows devices out there, I mean, that app platform for developers is really, really powerful. I mean, one app on every single Windows device is pretty incredible.
And I get this question a lot as we have the Xamarin traditional approach, building out separate user interfaces, which is really consumer-facing, really powerful, or Xamarin Forms, which is this abstraction of common controls, which is great for enterprise, CRUD, or, you know, maybe the Xamarin Evolve conference application that somebody made, you know, stuff like that. So you can do really powerful things. But then someone came to me, I was just in Anaheim yesterday, and they go, yeah, but you know, I want to take advantage of the HoloLens, but maybe my code will go on an iPad one day. And I go, listen, even if you're planning that, I'm like, you're going to really want to build a purely native UWP app to spice it up and get access to all that stuff. But then you can still share a lot of code, whether you're using Xamarin Forms or with the traditional approach. So I think that's where we have a nice balance. Is like, listen, I want to create a UWP app, and I want to make it awesome everywhere. Yeah, create that XAML, and then you can have that shared 70-80% of code that runs everywhere. We live in this beautiful C# world over here.
We're a good team. So yeah, if you are targeting .NET, UWP supports C++, JavaScript, C#, VB, so any one of your favorite programming languages. But if you do target .NET, it does run on top of .NET Core. And as James mentioned, Mono and .NET Core are pretty similar. So much of the code that you do write for your UWP native application will just work with your Xamarin application when you choose to target those platforms.
Yeah. And I want to give a chance for Jordan to chime in because he's being very quiet. Because JavaScript, that's what you work with, right? Does that run anywhere?
Yeah, you know, it's little things. Some people have heard it and used it. It's an up-and-coming, you know, young kid in the space. So, yeah, best for last, actually. I like that here. JavaScript, you know, everybody gets to rag on a little bit. But no, really, so with Cordova, you could go enterprise applications. You could go consumer. If somebody were to question me, like, right now, pick one that it's strongest at, I'd say the enterprise space, building out maybe line of business applications. The reason I say that is that Cordova can quickly bring something up, especially if you've got HTML, JavaScript, and CSS skills. And if you don't need to use the latest and greatest native APIs in a device, or maybe your app UI you're optimizing for a similar UI on all the devices, lower the support burden within the enterprise, Cordova can really shine quickly bringing that up, taking your existing team skills and lowering that total cost of development. That's not to say that it can't do apps that feel native. And I did a session earlier this week on it. There's a framework, Ionic 2. There's another one, Onsen UI, that's out there that let you get apps that are looking and feeling like native applications. It's true they are not native UI components. There are tricks people can use to put native UI components into the app. But to really be productive and save you the most time, you'd use one of these frameworks. You write the same UI code that goes across iOS, Android, and Windows. And you can quickly bring up an application for your enterprise and get it out to your user base. We've also got a distinct advantage that none of the other guys have, which is that if you go through like the Apple App Store, you can dynamically update your app's content without having to do a run through the app stores. We've got a service called CodePush that takes advantage of something that JavaScript has, which is that the app stores allow you to push out updates of your content dynamically, because it's web content.
Without being approved and going through the process.
Without having to go through the publishing process.
Which is a big problem. It could be delays.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're all jelly about that. So you win in that aspect. We all have no fight against that. But I will say at least Apple's gotten a little bit faster. They went from 1 to 8,000 weeks to one day. So
yes.
So it's not instant, which is nice.
I always get better for people.
Journal always demo code, but he's like, all right, Xamarin, blah, blah, check this out. I'm like, ugh, fine, whatever. I was like, cool.
I think what we're getting to is maybe cool. Beth, who helped organize this panel first, maybe we can have a bake-off in the next conference. We'll get them all up here coding side by side in the same kind of app. Cool. Well, we have a question in the audience.
Is this on?
Builds internal applications, and we're kind of in the same situation where we want one project, one app to build them all. So we've been doing .NET, C#, we're doing an Angular bootstrap front end, so sort of run whether they're sitting at their computer, whether they're on their tablets or their phones. But then it doesn't take advantage of some of the things like push notifications and things like that. So with the Ionic framework and things like that with Cordova, I guess I'm just wondering, is that something that we could run as a web application and also, or would they have to be separate projects?
Good question. So yes, with Ionic, you could actually create a web application and you could publish it to your server and serve it as a web app as well as be your mobile application through Cordova. They don't totally target the mobile web browser, but there's some plays in that space. John mentioned progressive web apps, which is the idea of being able to take a site and turn it into this you adapt the app to be a mobile application. So take the website and actually put it on as an app you can launch from the start screen of your device, and it can get offline capabilities, handle, was it some things like push notifications?
Those things are coming. Right now you've got service workers, offline compilation, you've got the home link.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Ionic is, they're looking at that route and going toward that type of a design for their framework. So it's one I would say would be worth exploring. There may be aspects of your application that don't quite fit the way they're thinking of web apps, so take a look at it. But that the idea is there, especially with Cordova, that you could build a website and bring it into your mobile app and reuse assets, definitely.
What's interesting is I did a lot of research recently on mobile landscape, and I looked at these products and literally dozens of others that are out there, trying to figure out for my own company what kind of things should we be looking at today. And the first thing that was shocking to me is there was like literally 3 dozen things you could do. So you have to figure out kind of where you want to focus. But when I spoke with the Ionic people, Max Lynch, one of the founders there, one thing he said to me was they have found that their users and their audience didn't just want to build Cordova apps. They wanted to use the Ionic framework. They loved it so much to build web apps. They were using it a lot just to build web-based applications that run on mobile devices but didn't necessarily take advantage of mobile features. So that's one of the reasons they're heading down this PWA route, is they're actually building features into it so that maybe you don't want a native feature in your app, but you want it to run on an iPad, or you want it to run on a Windows device or a phone. And you can use Ionic's templates to generate those kind of things. So I think what we're seeing in the market right now is a couple of years ago, it was either Cordova, Xamarin, or Native. That was it. You had to pick what you wanted it to do. Nothing else really fit that mold. Now we're starting to see other players come up in the marketplace. Things like progressive web apps are coming up from the bottom underneath Cordova. They can't do quite as much as what Cordova does, but people want to do web stuff, so they want to take those Angular skills and put them onto apps. And then you've got things like React Native and NativeScript, which you can write React code with your CSS, but use a view layer, which is gives you a native-like app. It's more native than Cordova, I would say. And then you can also use something like NativeScript, which you write in Angular and CSS, and you use, like, I'm going to call it XAML. They don't call it that. But effectively, the view layer is XAML, like Xamarin. Mm-hmm. And you can put that on there, too, and that gives you a more native experience. So I think there's pressure on all these platforms to figure out how can we get an app out there. And I think your shop is indicative of we've got people doing .NET, we've got people doing Angular and Bootstrap. Do I have to learn yet another platform, or can I take advantage of those skills and try to reuse those? There's a lot of people in that same boat right now.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Even when I talk to developers that are using Xamarin Forms, our cross-platform UI framework, it's like, all right, so I'm a C# .NET shop. Xamarin makes sense, or UWP makes sense. Xamarin, UWP, I can do everything. It makes a lot of sense. I was just giving a session with Jason from the Coca-Cola Bottling Company here in Atlanta, and there were traditionally ASP.NET developers. They knew all that. They could leverage shared code. They could leverage all their knowledge, all their libraries, things that they've built up over the last 10, 15 years of this amazing thing of .NET. Is that you find, even when you're building a cross-platform user interface in these native applications, whether it's something in web or something like that, eventually, like, you want to do, like, that's the thing, you want to do something. Someone is going to come and then say, I want it on iOS to do this. Like, go figure out how to do that. Right, and if it's a website, you just can't do that in some aspects. If it's a native control, native custom controls, native APIs. If it's a Cordova app, you kind of get a little bit closer, or then you have to go down to the other native languages. And then with UWP or with Xamarin, it's like we give you access to everything. And even in our cross-platform UI framework, you're able to still build completely custom controls, embed native control, controls into it that aren't abstractions. In our upcoming version, in your XAML, like you would say button, and it's a button, but now you can say Android : floating action button, and you have the native actual control. Like, we're figuring out that framework. So what we found from developers, we've been doing cross-platform native development for a while, is that no matter the best abstraction, the best cross-platform user interface, at some point you want to go take advantage and do something. Like, that's what we enable you to do. But of course, if you're like, hey, I already have this website, I want to throw it in an app really quick, that may be a quick win. But also, I would say, from doing mobile apps professionally for 5 years, don't take a quick win that's going to hurt your reputation in the App Store. I was at a zoo. I'm not going to point out what zoo it was, and not in Seattle, that's for sure. It might have been in Seattle. But I was looking up on a map, and I found out that they had just kind of wrapped something. I have no idea what they were using, something into an app. And their actual mobile website was better than their app. Like, don't let that happen, right? Where you still, like, your app is going to go through this process, things like that. So think about what's best for your users. And I think that is what we try to do on all of our teams. What is best for our developers, no matter what programming language or framework they want to use?
Yeah. So we had some questions on Twitter earlier today. And one of the ones that I got in a private direct message, which I wanted to raise up here as well, is this person said, and I'll pretend I'm that person, I work at a company, and our company, our stakeholders feel that mobile apps should live for 5 to 10 years just like our regular desktop apps do. So what framework can I use, and what tools should I use to make a mobile app live for 5 or 10 years? Internally, I was kind of chuckling, going, I don't even have a phone that lasts for 2 years, much less a mobile app that lives that long. But I think that's indicative of the mindset of businesses and enterprise. They want to invest in something that's going to last. This space, though, it doesn't last as long as what we do in the traditional desktop space. So how do people building with your platforms work with short-lived applications versus the desktops?
So I think one thing that's going to make a difference, again, is who your customer is for your application. So if you're building your app to publish to the App Store and you want external consumers to use this app, realistically, I don't think anyone could build an application for mobile that would last 5 years. That's still going to be competitive. But if you're building an internal application for your own enterprise customers to use, sure, why not, as long as it continues to get the job done. I think the biggest bang for your buck there would be building a native application so that you don't have to manage any additional web standards or keeping up with that stuff, because that's always changing. but building a true native...
I'll be jumping in on that thought in a moment.
All right.
But building Jordan's itching over there.
Building a true native application for whatever platform you're targeting is going to give your users the best experience at the time that you build it, and just out of that, you're going to get longevity. So, again, I would not recommend that for an app store application, but for enterprise users, sure, why not?
So I would agree on... I probably would have a hard time, yeah, saying consumer apps lasting 5 to 10 years. I'm with you there. Like, I don't think... I'm not even going to think about getting an app to last that long necessarily. I think my ideas around the web and Cordova might expand if you can assume that your users are using the same devices for 5 to 10 years. You can do that in an enterprise.
That's a big assumption, too, even in an enterprise.
Consumer.
Because enterprises refresh their devices, too.
Right.
And what happens if you refresh a device and that thing no longer is compatible?
Yeah, well, let me make a distinction on enterprise, because actually I get a slice of these customers. There are some that enterprise means bring your own device, my employees I'm targeting, they've got different devices, they're upgrading just like the consumer space. So let's ignore them for a moment and then look at the controlled environment where an enterprise is saying these are the devices we support. It is this Android device, this iOS device. You see it in retail environments a lot. I'm going to, you know, just pick any retail store that may have a custom app they use to check inventory, things like that. Those apps could last for a while. You know, you're going to want to build something. This works for my team in this market. A big effort was needed to distribute these devices out. We don't want to do that too often. So when you're controlling your form factor, the version of the OS, the devices you're running on, then that web wouldn't concern me because I'm locking on this combination of tech. It's this web view, this technology, and I think you can actually say the same thing probably about other native tech anyway. If you can lock all those requirements, then you can more safely build something that'll last 5 to 10 years. A lot of stuff, if I look at my own technology for Cordova and how it can age, a lot of people are still using maybe an older version of Cordova. Right now we're on Cordova 6.0.something. Plenty of apps are being built with Cordova 4, still targeting devices and newer devices, but they all maintain this baseline level of compatibility. Now, if Apple pushes out iOS or iPhone 8 or iOS 11 and they get rid of the web view that older versions of Cordova used, then you're in trouble maybe, and you'd have to do an upgrade. But generally, that tech, Cordova, some of the apps that you built a while ago, the past 3 years for sure, have been moving along with the versions, so you can, you know, if your team has to jump back in and do some code changes, the platform is still there and relatively the same thing, just little changes.
Yeah, I think the question, like I built my very first app 5 years ago and still in the App Store. We haven't updated in a while. We updated it to keep up with, make sure that we were compatible with any changes Google and Apple are making. And I think the latest release of Android N, for instance, is a great, it's pretty low level, but on Android, they ship a lot of public libs, such as SQLite. And the new version, they made it so you can't access those. They were very nice and are giving developers a long grace period. But every developer in every language was using these public things that were installed. Now we have to bundle them up. So we made all of our changes and we're there. And I think what's always been important for Xamarin developers is having same-day support. It's obviously easy with Windows and UWP. Like, it updates, the tooling updates, it's there. You know, with Xamarin, like, it's literally Apple's and Google's components. But we've been shipping same-day support for iOS since iOS 5, long developer previews before that. Same with Android. Google's a little bit different. You know, their upgrade cycle is not quite as fast as Apple's. I think Android ends at like 0.2% of the market after a month, which is sad. And iOS 10 is at like 30, 40, 50% now, which is pretty amazing. Like iOS 9 was 98% of the market, which is bananas to me. But we already shipped Android N support. And for us, it's not just about phones and tablets. When I think about the five-year-old app that's out there, it's what else can I do with my application? Does a new platform come up, like Apple TV or Android TV or Android Wear, watchOS, that I can now put my code on? What if Amazon comes out with a brand new device, like a Fire device or a Fire TV? Like with Xamarin, you can put your applications absolutely everywhere because we have SDKs and everything that you can do. And that's really nice because when you think about the five-year-old app, probably a lot of the logic is the same. It's the user interface. You want to make a fresh UI. I've been using Gmail for 5 years on my phone, and it basically does the same thing. I can compose an email and send it, but it sure does look a lot better than it did. But a lot of that logic is the same. So having that tried and true, like rock solid .NET and mono runtime that's going to be there, having access to all the new APIs, I think is what's really important when you think about the 5-10-year-old app, because they're going to exist. I mean, unless Apple removes it from the App Store.
Yeah, I think I would. I mean, I agree with everything that you guys are mentioning here. I think I would also mention here that I think the platform you're targeting matters. Like for example, like if you're going to target some of the emerging countries with Android, you're probably targeting API levels, which are not going to be, you know, Android N and Lollipop and the latest one. They're probably targeting still 12, 13, or if you're part of the Android One program, especially in India or China, you're probably even targeting, you know, various degrees of APIs that are not supported probably, you know, as well in some other countries from a device perspective. So if you're making that app and, you know, your application has user base across these different API levels and across different geographical locations, then it becomes very hard for you to be able to, you know, monitor that, make sure your device actually, your app is actually working and operating against all these different API levels on Android. And again, the other Android AOSP partners that are there with, there's many of them out there. I think so. I think it's a hard problem to solve in general, but I think that, you know, that seems, maybe things will change in the future, but today it seems pretty hard to be able to have that kind of a lifetime with an app.
Yeah, and I think the way I liken it, I'm making these numbers up as I go, because I can do that, because I'm standing over here, not up there. But the numbers I'd make up is, like, when I see apps that are old for desktop or web or things like that at large companies, or even smaller companies, they're usually 15 years. They're talking about, wow, we wrote that app back in, like, 1998 or something, or 2002, and we're still using it. And those exist in the wild, a lot of places. I bet many of you here have apps that you've seen at your companies
like
that.
Go to a bank.
Yes, go to a bank.
Oh,
1942,
is that a
terminal
right there? I feel real safe with all my money.
but mobile apps, I kind of liken those 15 to 20-year apps in the desktop to a mobile app that's like a 5-plus-year era. And you're right. I think there's two ways to look at it. Jane's mentioned some good points about how if you've got a mobile app and you don't update it, yeah, that's going to be awful. But a lot of places, especially with Apple, because the way they force you to upgrade, you pretty much, if you invest in Swift and iOS, you're going down the road of, I will update my app pretty much once a year to whatever their standards are, and you're going to have to retouch it. So there is a little maintenance cost in mobile apps that I think desktop apps don't always have, and they do live a little bit less, and partially because people are forcing you to by the phones they're carrying.
Yeah, I think, I would add something else, actually, that's interesting from, sorry, were you saying something?
Go right ahead.
From a perspective that we mentioned UWP here, and one of my you know, part of my team also works on this thing called Project Allenwood. I don't know if many people here have heard of Project Allenwood. Anyone here at all? It's basically a tech that allows you to bring your iOS application and convert that into a UWP application. So the popular Candy Crush application, that was, you know, popular game.
That was so 3 years ago, man.
Yeah. Candy Crush, however.
Soda jelly crushing.
Pokemon Go.
Not yet in Pokemon Go, but I think Candy Crush is probably a name that at least most people can relate to. And like when we ported that to UWP, we actually used Project Allenwood. And one thing you'll see is that one of the problems that, you know, initially that we had was that people wanted to update their app, you know, pretty often. And, you know, that was something that wasn't a part of the preview experience. Since then, we've obviously improved that experience a lot and so on. But I think those are the kind of challenges that we've seen with mobile tech, that, you know, you want to update your app, there's new trends coming, you mentioned Pokemon Go, AR, VR, you know, new APIs coming, and it's just something that you want to be on top of your game, because, you know, people are going to forget you from that top 100 list fairly soon, and that's probably something you want to invest in. So I think I would add that to that as well.
And Jordan, did you have something to add on?
Oh, okay, let's move on. It was just a little tangent.
Okay. So I'd like to ask the audience a question before we get to your question, sir, real quick. How many of you here are building apps that will be in a public app store? If you could raise your hand real quick. A couple, maybe like 20 people of the audience. How many of you here are building apps or would like to build apps that are going to go like for your enterprise, for your business?
Most of
them. Okay, the vast majority of the people in the room. Okay, and I think that's indicative of the place we're at, you know, based on the audience. There's sure are plenty of people building, what do we call them before the talk? Can I say craps? Somebody, one of you mentioned, in the App Store. Not that we're building it, but there's lots of apps in the App Store. There's millions and millions of them out there. But I think a lot of people are building it for internal places. I'd love to hear your thoughts after this question about how we target those enterprise apps. Like, how do you deliver them? Mobile device management, for example. So, sir, before we get to that, what's your question?
So, it even ties in with what you're saying, what you're mentioning. So we build enterprise apps. They're web-based. They're fairly rich applications, and they run great on tablets. They don't run great on phones. I won't bore you with what we're doing, but there's not really a huge need for them to run on phones right now. One of the things that our apps allow you to do is drag things around. And up until now, looking at how we might appify this, take it out of the web and appify it, I was convinced Xamarin was the way that we would go. to be able to drag things around. But we already have a great web interface that does that. It uses jQuery UI and the punch shim that goes in to make that work. And after your presentation, I'm sorry, I forgot your name, but after the presentation of the Taco tools yesterday, I'd like to see you two duke it out as to which would be a better approach, knowing that we've already got a web interface that elegantly supports drag and drop, and how well will that move to an Apache Cordova model, or should we go full bore to a Xamarin model?
Okay. Since I'll start with the web piece, since that's where you're at now. If the frameworks you were already using were already looking at touch and supporting the scenario of touch events and drag and drop and optimizing for it, I'd feel optimistic about being able to get an experience on your phone. I'm pessimistic that it actually supports that, just because that's what I find in a number of these different libraries with jQuery. So you'd actually, I'm going to say realistically, you'd have to look at possibly changing up the tooling you use for drag and drop, see how it interacts with scroll events on your device. And I wouldn't lie and say that that web code will easily move to your device. The code will run to move to your device. You'll be able to build an app very quickly and prototype it out, but it may just not work because it's not implemented the right way. If they did animation, get very specific with it, if they did their animation just the wrong way on setting X and Ys and manually simulating touch events, it could be a horrid experience on a mobile device. And I've seen apps like that before that just drive me nuts.
And just so, get a little context on this too. Are these apps, you said probably not phone, but more for tablet. Are these more like kiosk type apps, or what's the use case?
No, it has to do with branch management. They're used by reviewers.
They're like in a field, like a business in the field? Sliders and widgets on a tablet-based device.
Okay.
Gotcha.
So in that case, if they're already running in a website on those devices and responding just fine, then they'll likely work just fine in a Cordova wrapper. And you could add in the Cordova wrapper if you now want to get to some things like native device capabilities or have a, let's say, an IPA file, the actual app file that you distribute through an internal solution, because you can actually manage it and upgrade it and do stuff in a different way from through your mobile website. So there's a chance if you're already using them on the iPad and it's working well in the mobile web browser, it might even work better in some cases in Cordova because it gets rid of some of the extra browser cruft.
Cool. Yeah, I'd say on the Xamarin front of things, it kind of depends. It's like if you're like, I'm not going to rewrite this code no matter what, then you know, you have some routes to go through. If you're like, hey, I'm really open to really getting the best performance possible for these mobile applications I want to create and I want to be purely native, well, you can like overwrite, draw commands. You can get pure great performance out of it and drag around and take advantage of all the actual real APIs that are in there. So you're not going through like a web browser that's going down into multiple layers. Like you're interacting with the layer of the user interface, and that's really important. I think that's really nice on each of the platforms to be able to do that. If you're looking for like cross-platform drawing, like everyone wants system drawing everywhere, we have some libraries like NGraphics and Skia Sharp. Skia Sharp's really awesome. Skia is a Google library. We put Sharp at the end of everything. We have awesome libraries like Coco Sharp, Urho Sharp, Skia Sharp. We just C-sharpify anything that's C++, because why wouldn't you do that? We're big fans of the C-sharp. Also, everything works in F-sharp, by the way, and VB.net, because why not? But what's really interesting about you say, like, well, we have all these JavaScript libraries, things like that. Now, since the Xamarin application is a native application, just as you were writing it in Objective-C, Java, or Swift, you can still do anything. So you could embed a web browser. You can embed, we have templates for ASP.NET MVC razoring and doing having your JavaScript talk to C# and back and forth. It's a niche use case. But there's a plethora of ASP.NET developers. A few of you in the audience, yeah, like everybody. That was one thing I missed out on in my career. Like I didn't quite get it. I go to conferences like, how many, like, you know, ASP.NET, everybody. I was like, I don't understand the internet. But but you can embed that stuff into a Xamarin application because it is a Xamarin application. We were talking a little bit earlier, could I have embedded a Cordova application into a Xamarin application? I'm sure you could.
Oh, yeah.
Would you want to? No, but you could, right? But that's what I'm saying is, like, what if one of your screens, you're like, this is the most amazing piece of web technology I've ever created. Yeah, shove it in a web view and access still that native web browser experience, but inside of an app. And that's totally fine. There's a lot of applications. I poked around, like, in the Alaska Airline application. I love to dissect apps And their screen for booking, all of it's all native. I think it's Java for their consumer app. But the screen to book their application is a web portal part. I used our testing tool to figure that out. Anyway, you guys could all do it. It's not pulling it apart. But it's a web view because they're dynamic, and they've done all that hard work already. You can imagine doing booking of planes is not an easy thing. So totally, yeah, you can mix and match these worlds. That's what's interesting. We don't talk about too often. You can mix some C++ in your C#, mix some JavaScript and all that. You can mix these worlds together. And that's why I love when I talk to developers is I want to target every device. And with any of these platforms, especially going to UWP, you can really go anywhere. So it's iOS, Android, Windows, or tablets, phones. So mix and match the world. That's okay. You don't have to pick one.
I'm glad you mentioned that, James, because that's something I've looked into a lot lately. As I was doing some research on the landscape, and one thing that came up a lot, and I mentioned to you all before the talk here, is that I think the number was 90% of the companies that was interviewed in this one poll by either Gartner or Forrester, they came back and they said that they're building pure native apps. That was their thing. So the companies doing pure native iOS or Android, 90% of those apps that they build still have a web presence inside the app. They're doing some kind of web in the app, either web view or something else along the way. So I think these hybrid, that's not hybrid like the Cordova hybrid, but there's a hybrid type app, right? I don't think it's such a bad thing to say, you know what, I've got this web-based tool, it works great, but now I want to access the accelerometer or something else that's in the device directly. And I want to get the best scrolling or maybe want to add a game to my business app, who knows? You know, so while they're bored, while they're at work, kind of like the dinosaur game on Google. So you could do those kind of things. You could actually merge some of these technologies together to get the best of both worlds if you don't want to rewrite. Because rewriting, I love that question I get all the time of, should I rewrite my entire app just because ASP.NET 5 or Core, whatever they call it now, has come out, Core? No. Do you have a business reason to do that? That's really what we get paid for, not just because it's new and cool and awesome. So I think mixing these is going to be something that's going to happen more and more. And I know that's kind of where hybrid started with the Cordova stuff, Jordan, but what about like a UWP app, Danny? Could you take something like that and then embed part of a web application into it?
Yeah, so there's a native control in Windows development just called WebView, and you can essentially just host web content through that control. So I think pretty much every native mobile platform supports some similar concept, and it's true for Windows as well.
There's another concept that I've seen lately, too, of a company I worked with built an iOS and an Android version of their app, and they look exactly the same. They didn't go with iOS look and feel or Android look and feel. They made their own. And then they had some web-based tools that were building an app, kind of like what yours was doing, sir, over there, where they had a web-based app which they wanted to port to, like, the iPad, and they wanted it to work there. They didn't want to rewrite that, though. But they already had this app that they want to integrate with, which was written in Swift and written with Android. So what they did is they actually took that, wrote it in Cordova, and combined that into the existing app that they have using web views and whatnot. So I think there's a lot of play in this world where people are starting to realize, just because I've married this one over here doesn't mean I can't spend a little time in this land over there. I'll just leave you with that thought.
I prefer just to stick in the C# and just stay right there, but that's just me.
By the way, James, you really unveiled something earlier. So you could run for president, you know, because you have something in common with Trump and Clinton. You don't know how the internet works, you said.
I have no idea. I don't. When I actually went to go learn JavaScript, what was actually interesting is like, okay, if I want to go learn C#, now I can just go to .net, hit learn, and I can compile C# in the browser. It's mind-blowing. I don't know, whatever person
on
the team.
Yeah, by the way, if nobody here knows what .net is, go check it out.
Yeah, like dot.net. It's a very expensive domain name that the .net team bought that just is actually a redirect to Microsoft.com/net, which I always think is funny. But you can like do this in the browser. And my last company before Xamarin, we were doing like a Chromium embedded DVR system. And they're like, yeah, you have to learn some JavaScript to do this stuff. And it was really complicated coming from the C# mindset of this for so long. And it was actually complicated because there's just so many libraries. Like, I don't know where to start. I don't know where to go. So when I was doing push notifications for the Evolve Conference app, I went like old school JavaScript to make like web requests. What is that thing called? Like, it's like
HTTP request.
XML, HTTP request. I'm like, yeah. I want to go bare metal JavaScript. And I hated every moment of it. It was terrible. It's terrible. And you should have saw the website that I made for it. It was just like, and this is an entry field.
And every other comment is like,
and it worked. That was cool. Yeah, it's magic. I mean, anyone that does any website development, you guys blow my mind. But that's why I have a whole web team that I work with. And if I do need to do some stuff like that, there is a way to marry those two worlds together. I think even like building the Evolve Conference app, there's parts where you need to jump out to the web, right? You need to jump out to certain aspects. You want those things to look good. You know, if I'm pointing people to a library and I'm pointing them to GitHub, well, GitHub's mobile website's really good, or I'll specifically point them to the mobile Twitter website, so optimizing there, which is cool. But, for instance, maybe I don't want to always embed that information inside of it. There's a lot of cool things on the platform you can do when you're creating native apps. So for the Hanselman application I built, because I do love Scott Hanselman, I just updated it to say, listen, if you're on an iOS device and you click on one of his tweets, it doesn't launch a web browser or embed a web browser. It'll pull up the Twitter or the Tweetbot application by using some of the cool URL schemas, which is really nice. And these little touches that you can add to your application to take it a step further. Yeah, have our apps connected.
So another question I have for both of you, for all of you too, is when you're building mobile applications, regardless of the platform you build, there are things that you need to do in the back end to make your applications mobile ready. Can you guys talk about any of the things you've either done yourselves or experienced by working with a lot of business customers, but how they've readied their applications to be mobile ready? Now, I'll give you one seed idea. Is I work at a company where we have data from many, many decades, and some of our back end applications serve responses that are either SOAP, very large, or they're RESTful, but they return back a 3 meg file, JSON response. And over a 3G connection, I imagine that's not going to be great. So how do you encourage your customers to work with modifying or tweaking or just staying with what they have in the back end for mobile?
I guess I can start. So what I've done personally is I've just used RESTful web APIs hosted in Azure. But I think what you really need to do and really need to consider is just making sure that you're using modern standards and modern services that are really going to support optimizing your back-end services so that you aren't downloading a 3 megabyte file every time you need to update your data or something like that. You're really just caching stuff locally and downloading the new stuff. So there's a lot of documentation and a lot of standards that are produced to support these models, but just staying up to date, I think, is really the most important thing for that.
Yeah, and even having like a mobile optimized API on top of that API, I've seen companies do that.
Yep.
They're like, listen, the core API, like if you want that dev, give me everything, this is it. But for mobile, often you only need part of it. And we actually find that in databases, like they're like, oh, we have a gig data, as some, a developer, I have a gig database. My database is a gig. Can I just sync that? And just sync that real quick. No, you cannot just, well, you could.
You could.
And it will probably start failing on a lot of devices. But it's like, all right, expose only the data you need on mobile because you don't need everything that was there often. And I think there's a lot of different backends. I'm a big fan of Azure, go figure. But I was a big fan of Azure before joining Microsoft or even joining Xamarin. But there's a lot of things. I've given talks on AWS. It's like, listen, if you have that thing in AWS and you like someone's like, you can't move it. Like, cool, we'll use the C# AWS SDK and pull it into your app, you know, or I'm on-prem. That's the biggest, or I'm on-prem, I can't do anything. James, I can't, I'm government, I can't do it. And I'm like, that's the thing. It's like, I can't move it. And I was like, well, we have hybrid connections, which are awesome, but we also have the Azure Stack. Has anyone gone to any Azure Stack talks? You can run Azure on-prem. And you can do stuff like that. So any of the frameworks, no matter how you're building applications, C++, JavaScript, UWP, Xamarin, Azure Mobile Apps SDK is open source for all of them. It does online, offline data sync. It works with the on-prem, works everywhere. It does push notifications, file sync. It's pretty great. But I think the standards is great with anything. Like when I come in, I create a binding for a Java SDK. If that thing was built against a standard, man, it just works great. If you're building against the standards, it's good. And then if you build another standard on top of it, optimized for mobile, that's really good because you can get that performance or highly optimized mobile queries, right? That's what you need to deliver. But don't change. I had someone actually come. They're like, I have WCF, right? It's just returning soapiness to me. And they're like, should I just convert all that? I was like, well, we have a WCF client, and that's what I did 5 years ago. So I just consumed it. But I made very, very precise mobile requests. I didn't get the entire SOAP. I made it as small as humanly possible for only what I need. I think it's probably important in all of them.
Yeah, I like that idea of the mobile adaptive layer. It's all like a shim layer. And this is common. I've talked with people in the financial businesses where you've got like an AS400 backend that is, this has done the financial modeling. I am not messing with that thing. They've already got shim layers to work with their apps. You add another layer that can be that adapting it for mobile. And like James said, you optimize it. Even down to the images. If your app's going to have images, serve up the right sized images for the device because every little bit counts on those connections. And oftentimes, you might even need to do a little bit of something there to handle the unique mobile scenarios like offline sync. So having something that is this layer that I even like designing for the future, as in, it's simple enough that I could adapt this. If I started my app with Cordova and I talked to a service, well, what if my team finds, like, we think maybe we'll want to move to Xamarin? If that API is designed kind of with this flexibility in mind, you could switch out your different targets over time, but have this piece be stable. And that, like, we talked the 5 to 10 year app. If you can keep your services 5 to 10 years stable, like this layer is good,
good luck.
You might switch out your mobile tech if you have.
Yeah, it becomes almost more important than the mobile app because it becomes the entire strategy for your entire business at that point. You know, like Uber is just, it's an app, right? It's two apps really, for drivers and for consumers. But the infrastructure, the machine learning, everything they're doing with that data, that's what makes those apps happen. And they can change out whatever they want to do. They want to come out with some new app. Uber Eats, right? Oh, love Uber Eats. So great. Like, boom, they have all the data. It's just a new API, and boom, they're good to go.
Yeah, I think the one way to kill every one of your mobile platforms is to develop an awesome app that has awful back-end services that delivers a poor user experience. Because the bottom line is, if somebody develops an app, doesn't matter how great it is, if they can't get the data and it's not responsive, and if your back-end isn't supporting that, I think really what we're getting at is you can't always re-architect your back-end, but maybe you can put some kind of a layer in between. ASP.NET Core does it. I've done it with Node before. You can use it with any Azure or AWS-type services. Azure Functions could work as well.
Yeah.
Any way you can slice it, basically making that middle layer help orchestrate and aggregate that back-end data and getting precise information.
Yeah, I think I would actually maybe add a different flavor to this mix where, like, you know, a lot of games, like, you know, have session multiplayer these days, very popular, where, you know, you're playing a game, you're playing with someone else as well, and you're sharing that game space. And especially in those cases, you know, so you have your backend, and for enterprise usage, you know, I think James and a couple of other people here mentioned great points there. But especially for those kind of scenarios, you also have to make sure you're testing your app against different environment conditions. For example, you're driving in your car, and the network is choppy. You know, what's going to happen if someone's playing that game, and is it going to be?
Hopefully, they're not driving while they're playing it, though.
Yeah. You might be sitting in the car, or
there you go.
I want to advocate driving and texting and playing Pokemon
you might
Go.
You might be in an elevator, and you might be going up and down. So, how do you maintain your state of an app, especially when you're interfacing your backend? Do you put interfacing logic in there? Do you put some kind of session delays in there? Do you do some kind of replication of data locally on your computer device or your backend? So I think these are kind of like interesting things. Like when you're building a normal app, when you're sitting on your laptop and playing with it, these kind of conditions don't come to mix. A lot of people actually mentioned this, especially in the gaming industry, that when they want to, simulate choppy network conditions, a lot of times they'll start playing a game near a microwave, or they'll put the mobile phone inside a microwave. Not toast it, but put it there because it basically adds almost like a resonant cavity, which basically gives you that simulation in terms of what's going to happen. I think the other thing is I would mention about backends as well is that, you know, there's a mix between, you know, how much work you want to do on your compute device on the phone itself and how much you want to do in the backend. And, you know, depending upon how the phones are going now, phones are getting more and more powerful. You know, there might be a different mix there too that might appear in the near future, where some people think that it actually might be better to do more compute on your device versus on the backend stuff. So it's an interesting mix, and I think different kind of scenarios will bring different kind of apps. I think most of the people here are writing enterprise apps, so the scenarios that I'm talking about might not come into play, but definitely I think those will be interesting trends, especially again I would say in Android, where the market is so fragmented, you know, in developing countries where, you know, you can't, I mean, people don't download an app in China and India if it's more than 5 MB. I mean, you know, your app has to be Facebook or WhatsApp for it to be downloaded if it's going to be bigger than that. And people are not going to use your network to be able to bring that information down. So how do you deal with those kind of problems? Well, there's innovative ways, and, you know, some of them are there that people use, and some of them are still kind of like people working on that one. So I think I would add that to the mix as well.
One quick point, you just made me think of something that... So easy to think of the software side of the architecture, but getting your backend prepped for your system, thinking of the systems side of this, geolocation of your devices, your motivation for going mobile may actually have your user base going out of like the region and going to new areas. You may have to start thinking of distributed data centers and things you didn't before.
That's right, yeah.
And that has a little bit of an impact on what you do.
That certainly does.
Not one to overlook, yeah.
And was Azure got 34 regions now? So
something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
All over the world.
We have a question in the audience.
I work at a company where we make point-of-sale software, and about 2-3 years ago maybe, we started looking at going down the mobile route. And so way back then, I told them, you guys got to take a look at Xamarin. It sounds like it would be awesome, you know, so we could put it everywhere. And so they did a few spikes on that, and they decided that it actually, at the time, wouldn't work for what they wanted to do. But I think if they looked at it again now today, I think they would be all over it. So I guess my question is maybe, like, we went down the iOS route and native, and we also went down the Android route native. And it's easy to make a business case why we should switch to Xamarin now, because I think it would do everything we need. But are there any tools or anything that you could recommend that might make that transition over to Xamarin easier? Like, I know you mentioned Project Allenwood, and I hadn't heard of that. So I'm not sure if that actually would convert their Objective-C or Swift code to C Sharp for a Universal Windows app, or if it just sort of wraps the binaries so you can put it in the Windows Store. I'm not sure. And then same sort of thing, is there anything Android-wise? I'm just wondering, because they're already like 2-3 years down that road, they have all this existing code. While the business case to switch to Xamarin is really good, they might say technically it would just take too much time. We can't do it fast enough, so we're just going to continue down the road we're on.
I think I'll let James answer the repositioning of code from Java to C-sharp question. But on Project Allenwood, I think what I would say is that so what's happening in Project Allenwood is that you're coming in with Objective-C and C++, let's say, or Objective-C for that matter, in your iOS app. And a lot of iOS apps, at least a year and a half ago, were mostly Objective-C. And what we've done with Project Allenwood is that we basically, Clang is the compiler that you use today for compiling Objective-C and so on the Apple platform. And what we've done is that we basically take the same compiler and we basically have a translation layer that will create a binary that will map to your Windows UWP runtime. So what's happening there is that you're not rewriting your code. The code is not getting transpiled from one language to the other. As a matter of fact, your code remains roughly the same. Now, there's some interesting problems that we have. For example, like, you know, if you're opening an F stream or like a file and the slashes are this way in Unix, and on Windows the slashes are this way, we have some interesting problems like that that we solved. But what we've done basically is essentially a port of the iOS SDK API per API level to support the Windows UWP runtime there. So your app still remains, you know, looks and feels like an iOS app, but essentially it gets compiled and translated to your Windows COF and PDB format, which basically allows it to run like a Windows app. So that's mostly, you know, for people that, you know, have a really high performing an app. Like iOS is, you know, I think it's safe to say the most revenue centric you know, platform today. From if you're making like a consumer to consumer app, like a game or something else, like that you want to be able to sell, and in those cases, you probably, you know, want to maintain your iOS app as your premium app, and you want to still basically target different platforms for monetization or reach, for that matter. And Project Allenwood is basically for those cases. Today. Now, things might be changing and we might be doing more than that, but that's what it is today. Now, as a matter of fact, for the other part of your question, which is actually a great question, that if I already have all this existing knowledge in Java, or I've already built an entire piece of code in Java, then what to do about that if I want to move to Xamarin then? And for this hard question, I will look to James for answering it, I think.
Yeah, so it's actually interesting. You're not the first person to ask me that, or 5 years ago, 6 years ago, people you know, did spikes on Xamarin. I did one myself. I fell in love, and I never looked back. But I was the only developer, right? A company hired me to do all their mobile applications, design, develop, deploy, test. And if I wasn't successful, they were going to send me back to Phoenix and write printer software. So I had a pretty much had to do it or not. And what's important, I think, on any platform you pick is still understanding what the platform does. When someone comes to Xamarin, they're like, I'm just going to go Xamarin Forms. I'm just going to write cross-platform UI. Boom, it's going to be amazing. Yeah, it's going to be amazing, but then you're going to be like, well, why is it doing this thing over here and that thing over there? And it's because iOS, Android, and Windows work different. They're different controls. They're different things. The navigations are different. Like, how you share something is different. How you pull up the camera is different. And we have plugins, just like Cordova has plugins to abstract this. But you can always get down to the native APIs. I think what can be a problem is, like, say, 3-4 years ago, you're like, all right, we're going a silo approach. That's what we call it, different teams, different apps. And you just keep spiraling down this path. So you're like, I'm going to hire more Java developers and more Objective-C developers. But then you kind of forget that your roots is that 80% of your team are C# .NET developers that are exposing these things and that can be contributing. What's interesting is that while that application may still live in Java and Objective-C for a long time, think about the next app, the 20, the 100 apps. We have companies, and I've talked to developers that are building hundreds of applications inside. Just imagine scaling that out across all of these Java and Objective-C and then C# developers. You're gonna have one set of developers that can still learn iOS and Android. Like, I'm an Android expert. Like, I'm an Android developer. That's what I call myself. I just do it in C#. Can I do iOS? Absolutely. Can I do Windows? Absolutely. My passion is Android because it's like this crazy disaster of a platform that I love. Oh, it's amazing. I love it. I just love it. It's crazy. And I've done Java, Android. I've booted up Eclipse. You know, never wanted to do that again, so I stopped. So for your existing, we'll kind of get back to your question, is I think about the longevity of my company that I'm building out for the next app, the 100 app, the 5-year apps, the 10-year apps, where I want to build this amazing shared knowledge. I want to hand it off to my developers. If I can hand off 80% of my back-end logic, my business logic, to any C# .NET developer that comes in, they can understand it, then they have to pull it in. And they can pull in some UI, and they can work their way through the UI doing some training. If I am like, all right, now I have to hand this amazing Objective-C application to a C# developer, we're going to be like, ugh, you know, we've all had to do that. Like, when I had to learn JavaScript, I was like, ugh, it's terrible. Because that just wasn't for me, right? And just like Objective-C and Java weren't for me. And Java, just lowercase stuff, right? It's fine. And that's actually an easy transition. If you're going from Java to C#, you just capitalize stuff. The APIs are the same. So I kind of, it's the same. And Swift is kind of very similar-ish, but you know, we didn't change the APIs. I think that's what's interesting. So if you're transitioning an existing app, there's two things that you can do. The first thing is that all of your storyboards and nib files, XIB files, that's how you build iOS storyboards, they can be pulled into Visual Studio or Xamarin Studio. They're the same exact format. That's what I love about Xamarin. It's a native app. It's the native storyboards. Android, all of your resources, drawables, layouts, dimensions, values, string translations, all come over, right? It's all the same. And that's great for your user interface. And now you're saying, James, well, what if I'm using this custom control that I found on GitHub that's amazing? Well, what you can do is you can take any Java jar or AAR file or Objective-C archive or Swift archive, and you can create C# bindings around it. We expose the same technology to you. All of our current bindings that we have, all of Xamarin is open source. You can see how we built this stuff. It's great. So you can start bringing those libraries over or finding a replacement for it in the Xamarin world. But what's really important is now taking all that junk that you shoved into that Java or Objective-C app, all that business logic, and rewriting it once. And that's the important part, is rewriting it so then you can scale to UWP. You can scale it and share some stuff with your Azure backend, with your ASP.NET website. And then think about compartmentalizing this chunk of application that can be shared across all of your applications, right? It's not that you have three libraries. It's not like, oh, now I have to maintain a Java library, an Objective-C library, and a C# library. No. I have a C# library that scales to anywhere C# can run for all of my applications going forward, and that's a beautiful, wonderful thing, general. But that's the transition.
Yeah, I think you look more like a developer. I'm assuming that. So I think
he's wearing a C# shirt and a Xamarin shirt.
You know, my eyesight is a little bit dodgy, and those pluses, you know, seem a bit apart.
That's exactly. Yeah, so, the sharp could be two pluses together.
I read C++ for some reason. Yeah. Anyways, but. Essentially, I think the other part from a social perspective is that every time, like once you ship the app first, like, you know, year one, you ship this app on Android, Java, and then you want to make updates to it, you probably have the same app written natively on iOS with Objective-C and some Swift or whatever. And even when you start adding these features, they're going to start costing. Mm-hmm. And after a couple of releases, you will realize that you need a different way to scale this. And you want a different way to scale it. I think that's the other thing that besides the logic part on how do I, once I've decided that I want to go with Xamarin and then use everything that James talked about, that's the other social part. So if it hasn't happened yet, like different teams, you know, mobile is not new now, but at least a few years ago it was a pretty new platform. But as you go through a transition, that's something else that people realize very, very soon, that they need a better way of doing this. And I think that's the other social aspect that would sell to managers saying, you know, this is an investment in the long term and so on. That's the other thing I would probably mention there.
You know, there's an elephant in the room that I'm going to address too, and that's with a lot of the, I talk with a lot of X level, CX level people at these large companies, and I know you guys get a lot of feedback from them as well. Something I hear over and over again is our company is deep into C Sharp and Java or one or the other. A lot of companies actually do both, interestingly enough. They have different sets of people who do these things generally. It's not usually the same one. And then they're looking for people who can do iOS native, either Objective-C and or Swift, because now there's two ways to go, right? And they want people to do Android stuff. And oh, by the way, they're building apps with like Angular with JavaScript. So they're like, we want to be able to figure out how we can staff our people to be able to do all these platforms, one person. And they're some of them live in this dream world that you can have all these skills and be an expert at every one of them on all the platforms. And that's something I think we have to start dispelling with a lot of companies because, I mean, God bless you if you can do all those and be an expert at them. We've got four people up here. If you merge them together, you still wouldn't have all of those things in one place. So and I'm sure you're not making $1 million a year like that person would be. But when you do these things and you're looking at all these platforms, I think the one thing that's really interesting about it is the language, I think, is the easy part. Going from JavaScript to TypeScript to C Sharp to C++, yep, I got to mention that too. The syntax of those things is something we can all pick up. Polyglot programmer is a new concept Hansman likes to talk about quite a bit, where you know multiple languages. The language is the easy part. The hard part is the DevOps. It's the build process. It's how do you deploy these things? How do they integrate with other platforms? And that's what takes years of experience to figure out. Writing a simple program that launches an app is easy. Getting it to work with other things is hard. And I think that's where we're all heading towards is these companies are looking for mobile platforms like Xamarin because they like the fact that they can leverage skills they already have in-house. Or if they got a big web developer shop, they might look to Jordan and say, help me get my web guys up to speed on building apps. Or all we do is Windows devices. Let's go talk and learn how Danny's going to solve our problems with all UWP and Xbox. So I think you really have to look at the problem you're trying to solve when you're looking at mobile, when you're talking with your business leaders, your stakeholders, your chief technology officers, to make sure they understand this isn't just picking a technology, it's picking how we're actually going to develop things. And oh, by the way, do you always get the choice to develop in-house? Sometimes you have to develop offshore and you have no decision, input into the decision of how it's developed. You just inherit. You're an iOS shop, you've just inherited a Cordova app. What do you do with that afterwards? Or vice versa in any of these other ways. So I think having a little knowledge in each of these areas is a good thing, but being an expert at them all is a fallacy. I haven't met the person yet who can do all these things and do them well.
No, it's hard. Development's hard. I mean, it is. I mean, that's why we come to conferences, so we keep learning. That's why I love it, though, right? It's hard. It's not. It's a challenge. And mobile's that space. You can't just take a JavaScript developer and shove Cordova at and be like, hey, now you're a mobile app developer. You know, I mean, I wanted to be a mobile app developer. I started in Windows Phone. I fell in love with Android. I became an expert in Android. Did I become an expert in Android TV, Android Wear, and Android Auto? No, I did not. Can I do that?
And every flavor of Android operating system.
Exactly.
<yeah.
laughs> I got really good at phones and tablet apps. Can I make a really good-looking iOS app? Sure, but am I an expert? No. Mike James is, our other PM on our team. That's why he writes all the iOS blog posts, and I write all the Android blog posts. Now, you have to have these experts, but the nice thing is that we all can do the back end. I can dabble in iOS, can do this, but it's important to have that expertise no matter what you're picking. You're all solving the same kind of problems, right?
The back end problems, yeah. Getting the data, how do you handle offline stuff, as you mentioned earlier, on Kit. All that stuff's the same problem no matter how you're developing it.
Yeah.
So we're about to wrap up. I wanted to leave. We've got 5 minutes left. Each of you get about 45 seconds. Cool. Go for it.
Okay. My question before was a little bit tongue-in-cheek, really.
We like tongue-in-cheek.
A more serious point is one view of the world is that native mobile apps are weird. Like, we don't have native apps except on mobiles. So they're the strange, you know, potentially dinosaur in the room. And they should just die out. And I can see why economically that makes sense. If you run circuits.io or something, you can do incredible things just in a web interface. Or you can play Angry Birds in a web interface. You can compile C++ code down into JavaScript runtimes, and it runs fantastically, you know, amazingly quickly. So one question is, you know, genuinely, is mobile native application something which is just going to die out? And then, as sort of another follow-on question, more detailed, I just love the Cordova route, and I've just had so much success with that. I've really enjoyed it. And it's fantastic that the Power Apps are using that as a back-end. And then the Downloading JavaScript dynamically is going to be a lot of fun. The only problem I ran into was Internet Explorer as being not quite the same native-like feeling as I got from the Windows or the Android platform. So the first question is, maybe do we all just stop writing native apps because we could do so much in the web with Service Worker and this progressive web apps and this sort of thing? And then if you do believe it, this is the case then. Yeah.
I think that's a good question to wrap up on. We probably get all of your perspective on it. Is if you're building, is it time to stop doing native apps? And I know some of your answers will be already right. Or when? How do you make that decision? When do you start with a native or go to a web? And are they always chasing each other? We'll start at the end. Start, James, come this way.
Yeah, sure. You should always go native all the time. No. I think you'll hear from us. You pick the best technology that works for you and your company. If you're a HTML JavaScript shop, there's lots of options. If you're a C-sharp shop, lots of options. If you're an Objective-C shop and all you write is Objective-C, well, you got a great platform called iOS to make those apps on. What I love about native is that there's key investments in certain things that you can only do in the native platforms. There's platforms like HoloLens that you can go to Xbox to go to. And as Apple, Google, and Microsoft, as we expand these platforms to new devices, the next wave of things, the browser may not even be there. There's no browser on your watch. There's no browser in other areas. To get access to those native APIs, to expose the actual pure power that's going to be leveraged, I think that's why native apps are so important. Not to say that you can't mix some content in there, but I think that's how I look at it, is that I love Xamarin because I love the ability to get down to the native bits, mix and match other things. But I think that native's not going anywhere.
Yeah, and I'm a web guy, just to put that out there. Yeah. I love the web. Yeah. But even with the web, you got to look at native stuff is always going to be slightly ahead of it. So PWAs and things are always getting better. You get more device access, but you're always going to have the best with native.
Yeah, and that's just because Apple and Google and Microsoft, that's how they build these SDKs. That's how they're building their platforms. They want to create the most rich experiences possible, and they do that by exposing that. Now, in 10 years, if we all sit up here and one, all native have taken over, all browsers have taken over. But for me right now, I don't think native or the browser is going anywhere. They have a very amazing future, and as developers, we all have a great opportunity.
You're in the right room.
Yeah.
So we have a minute and a half left.
I'll go quick. So what James said, I completely agree with. Native isn't going anywhere. I mean, think about where we were with technology 5 years ago and how much things have evolved. And think about all the new smart devices that are coming out. Every week you hear some new device, some new glasses, some new watch, the HoloLens, Raspberry Pi 2 running native Windows applications. And to build truly native experiences and the best experiences for those devices, you're really going to need to build native applications. That's what I'd say.
So I'll throw a slight spin on it, because I agree completely there as far as I think native will be ahead of the web browser to some degree. I'm going to pivot it a little bit and end with a follow-up from a question I heard quite often of, I want to get into mobile. Where do I start? Mm-hmm. Since many of you are in the enterprise, I suggest looking first to what are your goals for mobile. Are you looking for personal goals for yourself to maybe do a different job? Are you looking to build out mobile into your enterprise? And off of that goal, figure out where you want to start. If you're an enterprise and you guys are a JavaScript shop, look at web and see about encouraging that, and maybe you can help form something in your enterprise in the tech that will help you get ahead in the enterprise. If you don't have any tech you guys are using and it's greenfield, go ahead and take a look at the other options as well. If you're a .NET shop, start with Xamarin. Like, kind of think about that to help guide which way you go in your path with mobile.
Yeah, I think everything has been said, but I'll probably add one thing there is that I think if you know up front that you're only going to target Android and iOS, let's say, you know, maybe going, you know, native would make sense. It also really depends upon the app that you're building. It's very hard to see, you know, Microsoft Office being written in JavaScript. And it's very hard to see, you know, something like Adobe PDF Reader or some of the apps that you really use every day, which are probably defining, you know, different experiences that you're using to be written in some of these texts there. But I do think that the cross-platform tech is catching up. If you take a look at JavaScript performance, you know, over the years, it's an exponential hockey stick curve there. So maybe one day that will be the case. But I think it's a reach versus revenue story. If you want revenue, you want a different experience than the other apps that are out there in the App Store, maybe you go native. If you want reach, and you're going more than three platforms, it's very hard to be able to maintain that unless you really have large development teams to be able to scale that and so on. So if you're looking at a small team, being able to go through all that platforms, you probably want to go with some cross-platform tech. If you have a team of like 100 people working on it, maybe you can split them half and half. That's probably what I would say.
And I'll leave you all with one final thought. If you develop in mobile, you will inevitably get this question over and over again. No matter what you choose, when you go talk to somebody else about it, they will get angry in your face and ask you why you chose that one, and you're wrong. So across the board, it doesn't matter. And I want to thank the four gentlemen up here. You did a great job for sharing everything today. Thank you all for coming.